Welcome to another episode of York Hospital Ball. This week's guest is John Challiner, a player forever in York City supporters' hearts for his part in the 2012 campaign. John arrived at York City a couple of days after facing them whilst playing for Kettering. His football journey before arriving at Booth and Crescent had many ups and downs, which John details during this interview. Whilst John is part of York's past, he's far from retired, still turning out for Stamford FC and proudly representing England's seniors on the international stage. This podcast is sponsored by longtime supporter Gav Rathmell. Every penny from our sponsors goes directly to York Hospital Radio. So let's get into it. Series 14 continues with another cult hero, the brilliant John Challiner.
So first of all, John, thank you so much for giving up your time tonight to join me on the podcast. Of course, we remember you so fondly, as we do all the players from 2012, but I wanted to touch upon your journey that got you to York City. I think I counted 13 clubs, lots of different positions too. You also played for a bit in America. And one thing that really surprised me when I started doing my research, as a schoolboy, you were on Luton Town's books.
That's where I started. So it kind of came full circle, being as a schoolboy with Luton and then obviously subsequently being released. And the ironic thing about that was we had to find out. You know, we had to ring up to find out if we're being kept on, you know, especially at the age of 16, you're like, the world's ended, you know, being released and whatever, and then having to find out by giving them a phone call just to confirm it. It's not the way it should be done, but obviously that's football. Start at an early age and have the harsh reality of football at that age, it can only stand you in good stead.
Yeah. And I think you were part of the sort of last generation, I think almost, of the old apprenticeships, and yours was at Rushden and Diamonds, where I listened to another podcast. I thought it was hilarious when you were saying the story about how you kept calling the manager Brian instead of Gaffer, and how kind of almost like football has these little cultures and protocols that you maybe don't know about until you're in that situation.
No, I mean, again, like, so going into the full-time game, obviously we didn't really deal with the management when you were a school kid. You dealt with the coaches, you know, and the coaches on first-name basis. So to go into a youth team and then walk past Brian Talbot at the time and just call him Brian, not realising that there is an etiquette, there is a way of doing things in the footballing world, and, you know, just walking by flippantly, just, all right, Brian, whatever. And then him calling a meeting to say, actually, there's ways of doing things, and it's Gaffer, and picking me out in front of the whole of the squad and saying, what do you call me? Yeah, Gaffer. I do apologize. I said, you can only, it's learning curves, you know, and that's how you learn. The harsh reality is the way you learn is obviously making mistakes, and, you know, you don't make them again.
And I said about you played a few different positions, and I think you started out as a centre half, I think, at Rushden. And I noticed one of your teammates at Rushden and then later at Aldershot was Ray Warburton, a top professional who I think without injuries could have played a lot higher, big impact at York City. What sort of influence did he have on you sort of growing up?
Oh, he was just, you know, he's the type of player that you aspire to. As a kid in the youth team, watching the first team and seeing the guys like Ray, and then going to play alongside him in the same team or whatever, and being in, starting off as a centre-half and Ray being a centre-half, you take things from people's games and put it into yours. And again, like I said, he was a great character. You know, he was always on hand to offer advice, and he did watch the games as well and give us pointers of to do this or to do that. You listen to them type of players, and they're old school players. And again, like I said, they've been there and done it. So you do take it on board. And again, any advice that you get, you appreciate it, especially as a young player.
And I feel like, and correct me if I'm wrong, but you really started to sort of become established really as a player when you signed for Aldershot, where you sort of morphed into playing as an attacking midfielder. And I think you scored like 5 in your first 12 games, ending up with 13 by the end of the season, including an absolute worldie at Tamworth that I found on YouTube away, and got to the playoff final, lost on penalties to Shrewsbury, which, you know, was a great achievement really, because I think you guys were only part-time at the time.
Yeah, we were, you know, one of few that were part-time. And I think the way the Aldershot came about was, I think I was playing for St Albans the previous season, and it came to the end of the season. And prior season to that, I was at Cambridge City, then I went to play in the States just to continue the football in school or whatever. And I was out there for 3 months, came back, and Cambridge City were like, there's no deal for you. So I'm like, okay, I had another year anyway. But then I signed for the St Albans, played the whole season. I think I played 45 out of the 46 games for St Albans, deemed not good enough again. And I'm like, so I went back to the States and played there again. And it was, I think, 2 days after coming back off the plane from the States, I had a trial for Aldershot. I think it was Hampton and Richmond away. Didn't really do anything, but I think because people had heard about me, and Terry Brown was like, no, we're going to take a punt on him. 22, energy, we can get that goal scoring and thing. And as soon as he said goal scoring and attacking mentality, I changed my game completely. You know, I thought, get forward, cause some trouble in the opposing box. again, like I said, I didn't look back, and that kind of catapulted me in the non-league scene. And again, going to the States, it just got me enjoying football again. A different culture, it was a different style, it was a different way of living. I was 22, like I said, and to go there on my own, it was just a great experience of the whole, and it got me enjoying football again.
Yeah, and it wasn't like a scholarship or anything, was it? It was like
literally for the college kids to continue playing through the summer when they're on their break. And as the football was, the technical ability was unbelievable. You know, some of the best I've ever seen. But because the structure of the game that they play, it was nowhere near what we were accustomed to at back home, and which we take for granted. You know, and they were on a learning curve, and it was on a, you know, it was getting better and better every year after that. But again, it was just the technical side great, but playing as a team, which football is, wasn't there. So you could pick passes, you could pick the teams apart quite easily. And being English and coming from that, you know, mentality and the way we played, it was quite easy for us.
Yeah. And going back to the kind of older shots Rosebery game in the final, I think it was played at the Britannia Stadium. I presume that was because Wembley must have been getting rebuilt at that time.
Yeah, Wembley was getting rebuilt. And again, to go there and play Rosebery, I think did they get relegated the season before? I think they did. So they were obviously trying to bounce back, but that might be wrong, but they were a full-time team. They had Dwayne Darby up front, who was at Diamonds when I was there, and, you know, a goal machine. We played them obviously throughout the season, and we were quite confident. You know, we took them at how well we did in the season. Unfortunately, like I said, we took the lead. Aaron McLean scored early doors, and then I think, I can't remember who scored. I think it was Dwayne Darby who scored for Shrewsbury. But then obviously the penalties were just atrocious. So it was like the lottery of the penalties. So they won that on that. But again, it was another learning curve. So I'd never played in the final before, never had that experience. Walked out of the Britannia in front of 30,000, I think it was. Mm. You know, we were out the corner and all our fans were around the thing, and it was just amazing. And again, it gives them experiences where you want to experience that even more. And that gave you the drive, obviously the disappointment. But then when you go again, football's the next day, it's gone. So you have to build and work on to improve on what you've done the previous season.
And you talk about the lottery of playoffs, and I think that the following season you got to the semi-final. Again, another good effort when kind of unlimited resources compared to some of the other teams. Got to semi-final against Carlisle. I think you might have missed one of the pens.
I think that was the ultimate one. I think it was the seventh penalty. Matt Glennon was in goal, was the biggest guy I've ever seen, and it was a good penalty actually. It was in the corner, but because he was so big, he got there, and it was his big left hand. But they still had one penalty to take. So when I missed, their fans came onto the pitch. They thought they'd won, that they had one more to take. And again, it was just carnage. So trying to get everyone off the pitch. And again, that's another thing to experience. The home fans in a playoff semi-final, it was packed out. And yeah, it's another one where there's a lot of ones where I had to learn from early in my career. But if you don't get them, then you don't experience anything.
And when I was sort of researching around that sort of time period of your career, I mean, you'd scored 22 goals in 92 games, I think, for Aldershot, but sort of technically released. But then they sort of tried to make out, I think, that it was about money why you left, and you signed for Exeter that summer, and the manager likened you to a sort of non-league Tim Cahill, which that sort of thing must give you a massive boost as a footballer.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest with you, with the way that Aldershot ended, we didn't even have a conversation. He had brought other players in the back end of the season. I was in and out for whatever reason, and football moves on. And as disappointed as I was, and I think I actually spoke to Terry Brown, I was like, I take it, I'm not getting a contract, or I'm not, you know, we're not talking about whatever. And he was like, you'd made your mind up. And I said, we haven't had a conversation. So it's one of those. Did he want to keep me? Did he want whatever? But I had a meeting with Alex Inglethorpe. He met me down in London at Chelsea's ground. So he came from, obviously he was London based at the time, but coming from Exeter to meet me halfway. As soon as I spoke to him, it was a done deal. You know, there's no other club that I wanted to, and got down there and it was unbelievable. He said, you come down to us, you'll get treated like a prem player. And I was like, yeah, whatever, you know. But because Exeter is so isolated, as in clubs-wise, it was, I couldn't believe it. I walked down the street and you did feel like you're playing as a Prem player. They love their football down there. They love the players. And if you're doing well, you're treated so good. So it was, yeah, it made the move easy. And again, getting down there and moving away and whatever, it was just needed to be done. And, you know, I enjoyed my 2 years down there.
Yeah, and I noticed that you scored in a 4-0 win against Aldershot on Boxing Day. And if I've got the right goal, I think you sort of robbed the player on the left-hand side of him and smashed it from a real, real difficult angle. That was my next thing. Like, that must be one of the most satisfying games of football you've ever played, surely.
Yeah, I mean, there was a lot of things come out. Oh, you only went for the money and this, that and the other. And again, like I said, people will believe what they want to do. And the manager come out and said he went for the money and whatnot. And I actually took a pay cut to go there. And as a player, yes, you want to earn, but I was still young and I wanted a point to prove, especially against them, and prove people wrong. But the way the gaffer down there, Alex Inglethorpe, it made the transition so easy. And then to do that, and before that, I think Paul Buckle scored. And I was over the opposite side of the pitch and they were celebrating. And I ran across the pitch doing like the money sign, taking the piss, you know, like, just, excuse my language, but doing that to them. And they thought that I was swearing at them, like the middle finger, this, that, and the other. So that kicked on as well. And it's banter between players, opposing fans and whatever, but they were throwing fake money at me, this, that, and the other. And it just spurs you on. You just want to prove the point and, you know, that they made the wrong decision. But ultimately, like I said, clubs move on and players move on as well. But the time down Exeter was just, yeah, it was a great time in my career.
Yeah, I was going to say, I can tell from your sort of social media that sort of York and Exeter are obviously two clubs that you've got a lot of love for, kind of mutually, really. And obviously, you played with the late Adam Stansfield as well, who I know you tweet quite a lot about him when it's around.
Yeah, I mean, we were a trio. There was me, Stano, and Lee Phillips, you know, inseparable around the club. And what happened to Stano was, you know, it was just devastating. And I have a lot of affection for the family and obviously what Exeter do regarding the Stanfield Foundation and whenever opportunities to play in them games to, you know, honour him. I'm there. It's the team we had down there was great. And everyone knows about what Stano was and his work ethic. And you just have to look at his lad. He just won the Euros, like, under 21. I watched the game and he's just like his dad. I can imagine, obviously, the sad situation that is, but he'll be proud of his son. But that comes from the family, and it's a great family and a great environment. And that's obviously the club as well. It is a family club, and they look after everyone.
Yeah, great legacy for his dad, like you say. And, you know, lost in another final, this time at Wembley for Exeter against Morecambe. Yeah. The same year, I think, that York lost in the semi-finals to Morecambe. So Exeter, I think, took 30,000 out of a 40,000 crowd. You set up the first goal, I think, after 8 minutes. I mean, you must have thought, this is my time now.
Yeah, I mean, again, that was a disappointing one. I think we started so well. Like I said, I've seen the goal back, and I thoroughly enjoyed it. And for Philo to score, we thought, obviously, we would go on and, you know, push forward. But as games go on and the occasion might have got to us and whatever, and then we went down to 10 men, and ironically the first ever sending off at the new Wembley, Matty Gill. Not many people know that, but it was just Danny Carton scored the goal, and it was a great goal, to be fair. And then obviously Morecambe pushed on for the promotion. So it's another one. I had a lot of losses in finals and playoffs early doors, but again, it made me the desire to do well after that.
And you ended up back at Rushden and Diamonds. Another good season personally for you. I think you got 10 goals in 57 games, including 6 in 5 as a striker. So you're pretty much playing everywhere now. Aldershot and Exeter were both promoted that year. Were you slightly envious then that your former clubs had gone up?
Probably one of the worst decisions I made to leave Exeter. They offered me a new deal. The pull to go home. I'd been away for 2 years, obviously, from Peterborough, and Rushden was only 20 minutes away from my house. And obviously being a youth team player there, and I felt like I had unfinished business. But decisions make careers. You know, and ironically, what Exeter did as I left, got promoted back to back, how the club and the fans felt about me, it was the wrong decision. But equally, I wouldn't have done what I've done. You know, I wouldn't have gone to York. I wouldn't have gone to done the double and things like that. So hindsight's a wonderful thing, but I still wouldn't change anything, because to go to York and play in front of the fans and Bootham and whatever and what we achieved, I wouldn't have got to do that. Yeah, it's one of those. But Rushden was close to home. They played me in the wrong position. They played me centre mid. You know, whereas previous I was on the wing or in the hole, or, you know, they're attack-minded, and they tried to change it and it didn't work until, ironically, Gary Hill phoned Paul Tisdale and says, how do we get the best out of him? And he said, get him close to the goal. Did that, like, the goals came. That back end of the season, I enjoyed it. And I think you say 10 goals, I think it was about 12 in the end after a slow start. But being home, enjoying playing at the club again, it was good. But again, that ended unceremoniously again. So it's like, you know, I have a spell at a club for 2 years, but that's football, and just got to go with what's thrown at you.
Yeah. I mean, your last near promotion, obviously we'll come on to the happy ending in a bit, but came at Cambridge, where you lost in the final at Wembley to Torquay. And there's obviously a lot of, so much fanfare, isn't there, and build up whenever a lower league club gets to play at Wembley. So it must just be such a horrible place to get beat.
Yeah, it is. And again, like I said, everyone says it, go to Wembley and you want to win, but you never want to lose. All the highs and lows of football. And again, that's another thing. I went to Cambridge. We had a good season. I think it came to the last game of the season when we played Altrincham at home. We needed a point. Oh, we didn't actually know that until after the game, I think, because whoever was competing with us lost. But we needed, was it 3 points or a win or whatever? And we drew 0-0 and got a point. And we missed out on 1 point to go up automatically. So that was a kick in the teeth to feel that. But then playoffs against Stevenage, we turned that around and, you know, got to the final. And against Torquay, it was just another final where we took 30,000, you know, outnumbered Torquay in that. But on the day, they were better. They took the chances. Obviously, Tim Sills, who I played at Aldershot with, goals galore. you know, and put it in the box and he'll score. So it's one of those where you just got to take it on the chin and then you take restock and then you go again.
And you were, I think, transfer listed by Cambridge and they were trying to cut the wage bill. And then you sort of drifted to a few clubs and ended up playing defensive mid for Kettering. Seven clubs in 2 years. Do people start to treat you as a journeyman? I remember speaking to Richard Brodie about this and he said after a while, the sort of contracts on offer get lower and they get shorter and you sort of almost perceived a little bit differently. Was that how you were finding it?
I think signing for Diamonds was the start of the downfall. Not downfall, but, you know, bouncing from club to club. And I think, like I said, I finished Diamonds playing very well and double figures and thinking that you're going to push on for next season, start the season well. I think my actual last game was against Peterborough United in the Mansell Cup. We beat them 2-1. Gary Hill wasn't even there. Didn't even watch it. He was on holiday. Next game, we played Arsenal and he paid me right back. And I'm like, backwards step and whatever. And pulled me in the next day and says, oh, we're circulating you. I'm like, crikey. So he's brought in Lee Phillips, who I played with at Exeter, and Daryl Clare, who score goals wherever they've been and whatever. But to hear that, and I'm like, so it was actually on the day before the start of the season that Cambridge came in. So then it's, again, an upheaval. And it's just one of those. You just got to try and get on with it. I didn't want to leave. But again, like I said, footballing reasons. And being from Peterborough and going to Cambridge United, you know, local rival, kept that close to my chest. But it's, you know, it's one of those where you just got to do it for football, you know, reasons and take it from there. But then, obviously, missing out with the playoff final with Cambridge the following pre-season, they transferred and lifted it again because they didn't go up. So obviously I had a second year deal. Wages went up and obviously they couldn't compete with that. But then they kind of treated me bad. I had an injury through the pre-season and the chairman came in and says, are you really injured? Are you this? Are you that? And I said, look, I'm honest enough to just to get on with my job and do it. If I'm fit, I'm fit. I played 40 odd games for you last year. There's no reason to question. And then he was like, oh, it's the manager. And then I spoke to the manager and he's like, it's the chairman. I said, look, just be honest. You know, football's short-lived. And I found out the hard way that not everyone's good in football. Through my career, I've had people do the dirty on me, but you know, you have to keep on going. And eventually, I think it came to day before the season again, they sent me on to on loan with Forest Green. I wasn't at Cambridge, I wasn't allowed to train. I wasn't allowed to play in pre-season. I wasn't allowed to be around the club. Send me on loan with no match fitness. Surely you want players to be fit, ready to go if you want to sell them. And that's not the case, what they did. So I played 7 games. Fair dues to Forest Green. They wanted to keep me, but I wasn't fit enough. I wasn't a thing. So I went back to Cambridge and then Martin Lynn came in. So he was like, well, if he's getting paid by Cambridge, he trains. He's in and around the squad. You know, we're paying him a wage. He's got to do the work. And I was like, that's fine. That's all I wanted. And to come in, he's seen me for a couple of training sessions. And he's like, this lad can play. Why are you not using him? You know, I'm not blowing my own trumpet or whatever. And it was just like, no. They purposely did a training session where he put all the first team against the reserves and I outshone him. I'm scoring goals left, right and centre. And he's like, why are you not good? I said, look, decision's out of my hands. You know, you can only do so much. And I'm honest enough player just to do my work and just get on with it. And if people don't like it or don't like you as a player or there's ulterior motives with what they're doing, I can't control that. And he said, no, I'm bringing you back in. Chairman didn't like it. And then the next two games I was involved came on. People were like, fair dues, yeah, you got yourself back in, whatever. And then the chairman said, we want you to go out on loan. And Martin Ling turned around to me and said, look, there's no deal for you. Go and sort yourself out. So I, again, for the short period of time with Martin Ling, he helped me again. He was honest enough, which you appreciate as a player. You don't want to just sit there and pick up your money and do whatever you want to play. So I went to Mansfield and, again, like you said, bounced around a few clubs. And another one, which was a big club, but run badly. There's a few players that I knew there and it just wasn't a good period in my career. Even though I played, even though I did all right, it came to the point at the end of the season again, no contact, no nothing. I'm messaging, yeah, we'll sort something out. Yeah, so it came to pre-season, nothing. So again, I was in that boat where I was out of contract again, looking for a club. But hey, it's football, there's plenty of players doing it. But yeah, it was a tough time in my career and you question yourself, you question everything going on outside of football, family, whatever. But then it's the character of trying to get back into it. So you mentioned Kettering. I went to play for Kettering for free just to get back into the full-time game. And Marcus Law gave me that opportunity, you know, and I enjoyed it. So I finished the season with Kettering, playing for, I think, probably about 150 quid a week on a full-time contract, which, you know, was a huge loss. But sometimes you've got to do it just to, you know, get back in the shop window. But again, money aside, I enjoyed it. It was, again, that was another local rivals to Rushden, you know, and a lot of fans were like, you traitor, this, that and the other, and came out, I was honest. You know, I need a living. I need to get back into it. And I think they appreciated that, you know, the honesty. And I think they came back to me after when I joined York You know, I was like, we're just using them just to get to the next step and for my career. So yeah, it was testing, but I like to think I came through it with obviously what we did at York.
Did you ever sort of consider, you know, jacking football in? I mean, you know, you mentioned there about needing to make a living. That 150 quid's not going to get back far, is it? Like,
No,
did you ever think,
not
you
when
know,
you've got family.
you know, I've got a family. I'd make more money stacking shelves or whatever it might be. Did that ever go through your mind, or were you determined to always
To
try
be
getting
honest
back
with
into
you,
football?
it got to a point where, yeah, I was like, you know, is this all worth it? Everything that I've gone through for the last 6 months to a year, do you need that as a person? Put your family through it and whatever. And I got through it. Obviously, the marriage didn't, but you know, that's another story. So, yeah, but
It's a
literally,
different type of podcast.
it was a testing time. And especially when I went to Brackley, and I don't even know how long, had pre-season and about a month or so with John Brady, who was at Dons with me, so I knew him well. And then it didn't work out there. He did the same what Cambridge did, and I was just like, look, I've got to get back to an even keel of, you know, enjoying the football. So then, like I said, went to Kettering, played Brackley pre-season, and he was like, okay, no, should have stuck by you. I said, look, players don't turn bad overnight. You know, it's things you've got to have that man management to know what's going on. And football, even at our level now in step three, you've got to know what's going on with players because there's a lot that they go through. And my manager at the minute, Graham Drury, is one of the best to help look out, do his research, find the players and see what's going on and help if they can. And that's few and far between. And again, like I said, getting to Kettering and just get back playing, it propelled me back into the spotlight.
But even at Kettering, I mean, again, listening to another podcast that you did, the chairman really took the piss with you, didn't he? I mean, there was one story I think you were telling about where you were wanting to speak to him about a contract, and I think it was only about £200 or £250, and you were sort of chasing him around the pitch. I mean, I was sort of laughing, but because the
Oh,
way you were telling it, but it wasn't
looking
funny,
back on it,
really.
it's comical, you know. And again, the previous season that I was there, you know, the wages weren't paid on time. There was always an excuse. There was always something going on. And he's driving around in his Audi R8 Spider or whatever he was driving at the time. And it was just like players have got living, you know, they need the money. It's not massive amount of money you're talking about. We ain't prem players where you put away X amount or whatever and it's set for life. You don't have to work after. It's not like that. Obviously, when you're earning it, it's fine. But to mess around from week to week or month to month and not pay players and expect them to come in and do the job, it's tough. And it came to pre-season. I came back the following season just to do pre-season and see where we go. And it got to a point at the end of pre-season, like I said, I was chasing around the pitch just to have a conversation. And he would be booting balls on the pitch and whatever. And I'm like, I'm standing waiting on the side, like just for a chat, just to find out. And then I finally got hold of him about after 10, 15 minutes. I said, look, you're taking the mickey, what's going on? And he was like, I see you as a 250 quid player. And I'm like, that's fair enough, but that's not what I'm looking at. But because that was all on the table, I took it because it's money coming in. And I said to him straight off, I said, if anything else comes in, I'm going. You know, I'll work 100%. I'll do whatever I need to do, you know, to help the team and whatever. But if you can't offer me, and it's not all about the money. It's not. It never has been. But you do have your worth. So I took it, and then the first opportunity that came, it was a strange situation at the time, but it was a blessing in disguise. And what happened, you know, after leaving Kettering was just the most amazing thing that could have happened to me.
Yeah, and the way it came in a 5-1 defeat to York, and I think York were 4-0 up, I think, after about 25 minutes, and you came on at half time. I mean, when you're in that dressing room at half time and you're about to come on, you obviously would have no idea how the rest of the week was going to pan out, let alone the season. But Gary said that you were the best player on the pitch and then signed you later that week. So just talk us through that kind of chain of events.
Well, to be fair, it was just, I think, like I said, 4-0 up at half time. Manager's coming, you're going on. There was no pressure. There was no nothing. And I enjoyed it. Playing against them type of players as well, that York had at the time, it was just, you want to pit yourself against them. And to see how the team played, they were amazing. That first half was one of the best footballing teams I've seen for a long time. And I was like, bloody hell, blown away. So then I just got on the ball, just played, created chances, having a laugh, a joke with Ingy. Well, I'm having a shot trying to score against him and whatever and things like that, and ended 5-1. I think got a phone call the next day, said the gaffer wants you to come down. And I was like, my boots are still in the boot room. I've got no boots to come and train or whatever. He says, just come in, we'll sort you out. And the deal was done. And another one where I was initially it was a bit dubious because it's a change again. York, 2.5 hours away from my home and traveling up day in, day out. And but this, again, it's the sacrifices you make. And it was one of the best ones I did. So I turned up training and he was like, what the, what are you doing here? Like 5-1 defeat again, you know, against them the 2 days prior or 1 day prior, and trained, settled in. Unbelievable bunch of lads, you know, that made me welcome, and the rest is history.
I think I'm right in saying that Jason McGill tried to sort of reduce the offer that he gave to you because he found out you were on 250 yeah. quid at Kettering yeah. and thought that was kind of almost like you're going rate. So that must have been quite a difficult conversation to have as well.
Yeah, I mean, any chairman, any manager, any try and get players at the lowest commodity. And we just said, like, we took that just to get going again. Yeah, obviously, he has his value and whatever. And the chairman turned around and said, not a problem. We know what you've done in the past. We know, you know, you can play and we'll accept it and do it. So turned up, took a couple of games to get going on the bench. I think it was Fleetwood away, actually, the first game. But yeah, soon got in the team and think Bange got injured. The gaffer come to me and was like, thinking about playing your right back. And I'm like, okay, in this team, seeing what how they play and, you know, how they utilise the fullbacks and whatever. I was like, not a problem. Didn't even hesitate. I was like, yeah, I can do it. Just to get back playing, get into the team and get that opportunity. And I don't think I look back. And I think the first game at right back was Wrexham away. And I think it was a 3-0 victory, I think it was.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable game to go there and play and then more so have a smile back on my face. But I remember some of the fans when York played Kettering and I was warming up saying, oh, because I had longish hair at the time and not longish, but longer than I normally have. They were like, look at this Gippo, look at this whatever, whatever. And I was like, oh, yeah, yeah. And then I remember some of the comments coming out when I'd signed and they were like, oh, this is the most underwhelming signing we've ever, you know, seen, this, that and the other. And I'm like, bring it on. I've got something to prove. I've got to turn this around. I've got to, you know, prove my worth to the fans. The rest is there. And I love playing in front of them. I love playing at Bootham every week and just playing and enjoying my football. And I like to think that feeling's mutual, even though I had to work and get the respect and whatever. And it's one of the best times of my career.
It definitely is. Otherwise, I want Ashley to come on this podcast.
Yeah, I know, yeah.
But do you think you sort of reveled in it more then because of that chain of events and all the clubs that you'd been to? And now I think you're about 30, I think I worked out at this point. That must have almost, you said about the smile on your face, that must have been because of all that sort of heartache and all those experiences that you'd been through.
The thing is, I remember someone saying to me, you're just here, you don't warrant being here, you don't, you know, you shouldn't be playing for a club like this. Again, like I said, I just took that on the chin and I was like, I can prove everyone wrong. After everything that I've gone through, I believe in myself still. I can play football. And I think the players that we had, especially in front of me, Ash Chambers, Matty Blair, you know, helped me out immensely. The work rate and the effort that they put in made my job so easy. End of the day, I got the ball and I just gave it to them two. And then they went and did their stuff. I chipped in. And as the games and season went on, I grew in confidence. And I started to believe, yeah, I'm here for a reason. I'm going to enjoy my football. And I think playing right back, especially in that team, was one of the best footballing teams I've ever played in, you know, throughout my career. And it was so enjoyable to play because we know we would score. We would know we would win. And yes, there was times where, you know, it didn't go to plan and whatever, but we knew we always had a chance, and especially with the players. And I just speak about the team and I've just got a massive smile on my face, thinking back about it and, you know, all the players that were in the squad and that. It was just such a great time.
Yeah, and obviously you played Kettering at home and won 7-0, and I think you scored in that as well, as did Moses Ashikodi, who played for Kettering as well. I think, yeah. To my memory, he celebrated a little bit harder than you did that day.
Yeah, I was kind of, even after everything that went down at Kettering and, you know, whatever, I do have respect for the obviously previous clubs. And yeah, Moses kind of went, took his shirt off, flung it away, 7-0 at the time, and you're just like, just relax. But yeah, it was always nice to do well against and prove, like I said, clubs wrong and not rub it in their face. But deep down inside, I'm like, yeah, the right decision was made, and the results that we're doing and the way I was playing at the time proved right.
Yeah, and I'd say your most significant goal for York probably came against Solihull in the FA Trophy in the last minute, which forced a replay.
Yeah.
Possible offside, possible foul, people say, but possibly the moment that, yeah, I think York knew the name was on the trophy.
That was, again, like I said, we were moments before getting knocked out of that, and it was offside. If it was, people say it wasn't, but again, it's you just got to just continue. And obviously I followed it in. The boys weren't very happy because we had to postpone the Christmas do, but you know, it was one of those. And I think we probably took that game too lightly. They were, I think, a league below and probably weren't focused, but then we did the business on the Tuesday night, I think it was, down at their place, and put a comprehensive display on. And I think we bought 4-2 or something, 4-1 or something at their place. And I think that was the time to kick on as well. And it just gelled us as a whole team.
Yeah, and that season was very much sort of total football, wasn't it? And if ever a goal was to represent that team. It was a Jason Walker overhead kick for me against Grimsby. And it was your cross, I think, into the box initially. Yeah. And I mean, you played for a lot of promotion chasing teams. Was this the sort of the best footballing side you'd been in?
Without doubt. You know, the footballers that we had in this team, like we had Andre Picard, we had Patrick McLaughlin, Matty Blair, Ash Chambers, Jason Walker, like goals galore. And, you know, then you had the back line. You had Chris Smith, unbelievable captain. You know, my roomie and whatever. And again, Michael Ingram at the back, who's one of the best keepers I've ever played with. And against the football we played, you know, the build-up to that goal, backwards fourth, Jay Meredith, down the left-hand side, came back, Andre Bukar switched it to the right-hand side, found some pace somewhere to get down the wing and to put the cross into, I don't know if Paddy headed it or claimed the assist, but, you know, that overhead kick, unbelievable. One of the best, you know, footballing goals I've ever seen, and to be a part of it. And again, I think it kind of got around, and, you know, on the internet, and people started commenting and seeing it like, wow, a really good goal. And against, like I said, against a team like Grimsby, a big club and not long been down into the conference as well, we feared no one. Again, we took that onto every game, and, you know, we just knew we'd get a result, and didn't always work, but we had the chances to always score and play nice football, and it was enjoyable.
And similarly, you've played for a lot of well-respected non-league managers as well. Where would sort of Gary Mills rank for you?
I've always said there's only two that I would probably say. Alex Inglethorpe, you know, who's gone on to do the youth at Tottenham. He's now at Liverpool. And the other one, Gary Mills, straight-laced. He told me how it was, what we're going to do. And it helped being in the squad that we did. But he was the person who put that squad together. So he got me back in. And I remember after the trophy final, he sat next to me. And he was like, this is better than being on the scrap heap, isn't it? So it's things like that. And again, it means a lot as a player just to have that communication with a manager and have that respect. And ultimately, what we achieve, that goes a long way. So yeah, he's up there with the best that I've ever played for.
Yeah. And when it came to Wembley and the game against Newport, were you able to enjoy it, or were you conscious that you've tasted defeat there before? And
that was a weird one, because even though we knew to do it, I've lost two previous encounters there. I didn't want to make it a third. So obviously when Matty's gone through and scored, and then obviously Banja scored, and it was only probably the last 5-10 minutes where I sat back and I like took it in. You know, the game went so quick, and even prior to that, their forwards had a couple of opportunities to score. I think one of them missed a one-on-one clean through, but after that we were like, I don't think they caused us any trouble other than that. But when we got the goals, and then I finally knew, like, a Wembley winner, and I could sit back in kind of last 5-10 minutes. But saying that, even in the last 5-10 minutes, me and Smudger fell out, you know, because someone didn't pick someone up in the box. And that's the mentality that the squad had right until the last kick of the game. We were at each other. And I think on the video, you saw him kicking me at the final whistle, you know, because we were at each other. And it was just things like that that, you know, pushed us through, and standard that we had. And it was just great.
Yeah. And being able to play that sort of brand of football on the biggest stage, that must be a real pleasure to have been part of.
Then 8 days that we had, it was just, it was a blur, but it was great to then go on and play in the final after winning that and getting, obviously, a trophy. First trophy that I've had in my career at 31, 32, maybe, mm-hmm. maybe like that. I hear a lot of players these days saying, I can't do this, I can't do that, talking to me. And I'm like, look, it took me 32 till I got into the league. It took me 30 or till I got to win anything. Don't tell me you can't do it at 20, 21, 20, whatever your age is. Setbacks are part and parcel. So football's tough. If it was easy, everyone would be doing it, you know. And these days, there's a lot of academies, a lot of things to play in football. But to make it in the game, it's very, very tough. And again, it's made easier by the players that I played with at York, you know, to achieve what we did, because the football inside, the enjoyment, you know, the camaraderie within the squad, which was, like I said, it was unbelievable.
And as we know, you'd gone close in the playoffs several times. I mean, the 2012 playoffs literally couldn't have been more perfect for you in terms of facing former clubs, couldn't it? Sort of Mansfield in the semi-finals, you said you didn't have a great time with them, and the final against Luton, obviously poetic because they were the team that initially released you. So, but you got injured, didn't you, in the first half? Just remind us of that injury and how devastating it was to have to go off. And were you recovered enough for the celebrations?
Yeah, I mean, to get to the final, to beat Mansfield and Newport previous as well. Yeah, it's always nice. Again, it's going back to proving people wrong. And again, I remember in the trophy final, after collecting the medals and the trophy, the Newport chairman was like, knew we should have stuck with you. It's one of those. I played four games for him, or five games, and scored one goal. But he was like, you know, we saw enough to do it. But because of travel, this, that and the other, and it just wasn't feasible. I was driving from Peterborough to Newport every day, and it was tough. But to hear that from people, to prove people wrong, to prove that you can still do it, you know, what's a better way to do it? Winning at Wembley, winning the trophy final, winning the playoff final. And like you said, against Luton, who we had battles with and through the season, no better feeling. And against the manager who refused to take you at some club, Paul Buckle. I speak to him off and on now and prove him wrong. He said about the Torquay one, he did Cambridge, he was manager at Torquay, got one over me then. And then he turned around to me and said, yeah, but you got me back in the playoff final, you know, for York and Luton. So it swings and roundabouts, and it's the way you learn from obviously previous situations. And but again, going into that playoff final after winning a few days before, you know, we had the confidence of doing it. Didn't start that great, Andre Gray scoring. But again, like I said to you, we always knew we'd score goals. And when Ash put it in, I'd literally just gone off. I think it was from the free kick that I got injured. And literally, I think it was coming together with George Pilkington. Looking back on it, he won the ball. Shouldn't have been a free kick. But these things happen in football, and great ball in. I think Smudger hooked it back in. And then Ash obviously smashed it home. And we just went on from there. And tell a lie, I was still on the pitch at that time. I remember that I've got a picture of me, Blairy, Ash celebrating. And again, so I was in, but it came off, and it was ankle ligaments. And I think I was out for 6 weeks after that.
Did you know in that moment then that there's just no way you can carry on, was it?
Well, to be honest, I carried on for probably about 10 minutes. And I think it was when a ball was played down the wing and I was chasing Robbie Wilmot. And obviously he's not slow at the time. And I caught up with him and I made a block, and I just can't keep doing this. You know, I've got the pain. I can get the adrenaline can get me through, but at a point it will just stop. And I spoke to the gaffer, and he was like, "Look, we've got players who can come on and get us through, get us on. You've done your bit for 40 odd minutes. We're in a good position. Let's do it." So I was like, as much as I was disappointed, it's a team game. It's, you know, you got the squad to do that, and obviously Brownie came on and shored it up, and look what he did in his career after York. So
absolutely, and the end of season, then, you know, up and top bus parade. You're finally a Football League player after so many attempts. And did it take a bit of time to sink in? Were you thinking back to thinking, God, at the start of the season, I was chasing a chairman around the pitch to get an extra sort of a little bit of money. Yeah. It's an incredible story, really.
It's unbelievable. Again, when you're talking about the catering and whatever, and you're questioning if you carry on, and everything goes from your mind. But then obviously, cliches left, right, center. Football changes. Day to day, football changes. Every day, every training session you have, there's injuries, there's whatever, and it can change so quickly. And, you know, the fortunes that you can have in a career, you just don't know. And you just got to do everything you to be ready to take the opportunities, take the situations that come into your hand, and do everything right. And like at that point, I was in the right mind. And then witnessing what we did, the parade around York, oh my God, you know, the fans came out in force. It was unbelievable. And, you know, the support that they showed, and, you know, and there was times in the season where people questioned us. People questioned, you know, if we were going to do it or if we're good enough or whatever. And it spurs us on to do it, and to see everyone come out. And the victory parade was just nuts. It was just, the whole of York was just full. And again, for what we'd done, I remember on the way home, someone's caught me on video going, we're on FIFA, babe, and things like that. And the pinnacles of things like that that come with getting into the league. And it's just a different world, league football to a conference, even though there's big teams in the conference. Football League is different. I enjoyed the season I had in there. I wouldn't have any of it if it wasn't for York.
Yeah, I almost sort of thought, as soon as the fixture list came out, I thought we're playing Bradford City rather than Bath City. That's kind of how I sort of thought about that sort of upgrade to the Football League. And what's your sort of memories of why it seemed to take a bit of a downward turn in the new year? I mean, I was trying to think back, and I vaguely remember you got injured by one of our own players, I think, didn't you? And that must have been hard for you to see it sort of happening and not be able to sort of help, as it were.
I mean, I played a lot of games early doors, coming on and whatever, and being in the league, I was happy to do that because obviously I was disappointed because I finished the season playing, you know, starter and whatever, and it came back pre-season and started the season. He went back to Banjo right back, and then you accept it because you're in the league. It is a squad game. I remember going to Millsy and the gaffer, and he was like, I said to him, obviously, work out why I'm not playing and whatever. And he was like, to be fair, you can go back conference and play. You can play week in, week out if you want, or you can, you know, get on with it and be a Football League player. And I said, and it was the day before a journey down to Plymouth, you know, and being playing against Exeter and whatever, and to go down, I was like, yeah, I'm never question it or whatever, but I got asked the question just to, I'm happy. And he was like, just get on the coach and go and enjoy being a Football League player. And the way it ended, I think it was Gillingham on a Tuesday night, and I think Gillingham were top, and that week the gaffer pulled me in and he was like, we're going to start you. So I would waited for my chance for so long, coming on bit parts of the sub and whatever and enjoying the games. And then he suddenly turned to me and said, like, we're putting you in. So he put me, I think it was whoever I played four games straight. He's starting to enjoy it. And it was on the Tuesday night against Dillingham. I think it was Michael Rankin. Corner come in. We were both side by side together. I was saying, calm, relax. I'm getting the ball with having a break. He swung and went to clear the ball. I've taken a touch and he's hit my standing leg. And he's not a small guy. He's got a lot of power. And I've gone down and the lads, we're still defending. The lads are trying to pull me up or whatever. Got back to defend another corner. And I said, this isn't right. Ended up fracturing my leg. And to wait that long to get back in the team and enjoy some, you know, games, to get an injury like that. And that was my first real injury. You know, I'd had cuts and bruises and sprains and stitches or whatever. But to be out for that long and watch the team and having to watch, you know, what was going on, and ultimately the gaffer getting sacked, which I think was tough, because what we achieved last year, you give them the whole season. You know, we weren't in a peril position. We were mid-table, I think, at the time. We were just doing okay. And then a change of manager, we just dropped to survive on the last day of the season, away at Dagenham, Foy and whatever of surviving. But we should never have been in that situation. And I think the turnover of management or players or whatever just unsettled the team. But it's football, it's decisions. You live and die by it. And again, all you have to do is look at the next season and weather and took them to the playoffs. So it's one of those. But to watch the team slowly fall down the league while not being able to do anything. Yeah, it was tough. It was tough for any player not to play, but ultimately that was another learning curve, you know, just to sit and watch and support the team. Ultimately, we safe on the last day of the season.
Did you feel like your time was up then once Nigel came in and not having that time to turn,
I didn't,
kind of prove yourself to him? No,
I didn't, to be fair, because I got back in and Worthington brought me in. He played me in midfield. He put me in front of players who have played all season and whatever. And so I thought I had a chance. And then I was involved for the last three or four games, but then got pulled in and he turned around and he said, you hadn't seen enough of me. And I'm like, you've virtually got 2 years worth of film. You've got coaching staff is still here and know what I can do and whatever. And you've seen in the space of 4 or 5 weeks that I can play. But he wanted to bring his own players. You understand that as a footballer, you understand that or whatever. And again, at the time, I was just appreciative of what I'd achieved there. But now looking back, I was a little bit disappointed that he didn't give me the opportunity. But what was I then? 33 at the time, coming back from a fractured leg. Not many players would have got a new deal, you know, age, whatever, regardless of what you could think you can do. And it says everything. I'm still playing at 44. So he could have had a few more years out of me. But everything that York gave me, you know, was a blessing. And I hold the club and everyone involved, you know, with high regard and, you know, one of the best times of my career.
Yeah, you mentioned there about sort of the amount of games you've played. I think you've got over 400 appearances, I think, for Stamford since you've gone back. I think they were one of your sort of early teams in your career, weren't they? I mean, it's incredible, really. Yeah. And I thought we'd finish up by talking about your international career.
Yeah, I mean, just playing for Stamford, just continue. And I went to Stamford just as a stopgap because I thought I would just bounce back, you know, get fit. But nothing came. And Stamford's local to me. It's 10 minutes down the road. And I knew the manager from playing with him previously, and he just said just come pre-season. I had a spell at Halifax for a month, but travelling again, Peterborough to Halifax. I played 5 games and it didn't work out, but I enjoyed my time there. But then went back to Stamford and the rest is history. I've stayed there. I've been there what, 10 years now, still playing, still involved and enjoying it, especially at my age. You've got to do it. But with playing with Stamford, hit 40 years old, and then this England Senior World Cup came along, and again, it's another lease of life. And to go out to Thailand and play out there in a different culture, different teams, different environment, and different, it's something at my age you wouldn't think you'd do, and learn something different, learn a different way of playing. And last tournament, the tournament before, missing the final with 2 yellow cards against Iran in the semi, my English mentality, playing here, rough and tumble and whatever, playing against them type of players, and any touch, they go down. And it was 2 of the softest yellow cards I've ever seen. And again, I couldn't believe it. And I think the second yellow card was a foul on me anyway. But the mentality of English, again, against referees and talking to him and the way we talk to him, he kind of wanted to send me off from the get-go. And it's just another learning curve. And I've gone back this year. And one of the lads, Luke McCormick, who played in the league for Plymouth for God knows how long, he came up to me and said, you've learned. You've learned how to play against the referees here. You've played against the players. You're calm. You know, you're cool. You know, you're just enjoying it. And I said, well, I've learned from the previous experience, you know, to miss the final last year, ultimately we won it. So it was, again, you had that euphoria, but not to play in it, you're disappointed. It was one of those where I wanted to come back and play in the final. Enjoyed it more. Knew what to expect, knew what was happening, knew how to, you know, deal with the situations that, you know, the teams.
It was quite a crazy final as well, wasn't it? Was it penalties and...
I thought I'd seen everything in football. Literally, like, we'd beaten New Zealand in the final, one of the best performances we'd played. We'd beaten Fiji 5-0. They were favourites after the qualifiers or the group stages. We blew them away. Got Australia in the final. Before it even the ball had been kicked, they came to us and said, they've got a suspended player, but they're going to play him. And then we're like, what do you mean? They're going to, rules are rules. I missed it last year. How can they do that? I said, well, what's going to happen? They were like, well, if he plays, you win. For it doesn't matter, you will. But if they can't play, then they're not going to play it. They're not going to even partake in the game. And we're like, so we win either way. And they were like, yeah. And I was like, now we can just relax and play the game. If they want to play it, they play it. So I was in the tunnel and I was looking, where's the number nine? Is nine playing? And he's like, he's there. And I'm like, yes. Right, we've won this. So the game's kicked off. We've gone 2-0 up, cruising. Easy, not easiest game, but because obviously there's no pressure. I'm so 2-up. Luckily, I scored the second one as well. So I was on a high. But then they pulled one back. Halftime, 2-1. Second half kicks off. They play the ball through. Clearly offside. Way offside. And we've stopped. And we're like, what's going on? And it's the player who's suspended. So he's gone through on goal. Our keeper's stopped, but then gone again, taking him down, got booked, penalty. And their player's taking the penalty. So he's scored. And we're like, what's going on? This seems comical. This seems a farce. But then, obviously, Tuchel got to penalties. This suspended player has taken the first one. We've saved it. Luke saved it. Referee's gone. Keeper's off his line. So retake. Keeper's booted the ball away. Referee sent the keeper off. And we're like, you can't send the keeper off in a penalty shootout. What's going on? He's like, no. So 10, 15 minutes. He's ended up rescinding the red card. That player's retaking the penalty, scored. So then the next one, we saved it again, offline. Are you joking? Are you seriously? What's happening?
This is a tournament,
we couldn't
sorry.
Even think. But then they've saved one of ours. We've got a lad down the byline videoing their keeper's off the line. So we're like, off the line, whatever. We showed the referee, and the referee, we don't care. Got evidence to show he's off the line. Retake said, no. We thought then we're off. We're not continuing in this game. But we continued. They beat us on penalties, 5-4. England losing the penalty shootout. Who would have thought it? But we knew we'd won. Comical, because we had a gala dinner after. The Aussies still thought they'd won it. Their management hadn't told them if he'd played. Then they announced that every team go up and get medals, trophies or whatever. When it came to runners-up, Aussies thought it was the England. Announced the Aussies. Oh my God. Absolute carnage. So we've gone to our management. You go and collect the trophies, the medals. We won't go up. So we've agreed that. Management gone up. Aaron O'Connor's gone up. Followed the management. He's gone. If I'm here, I'm going to get my medal. I'm going up on the thing. Oh my God. Aussies storm the stage. Like trying to pull our management off, literally trying to pull Aaron O'Connor off. And where he's like, get off. And he's still kicking off. Little did I know that the New Zealanders don't like the Aussies. I thought they were close, as in countries-wise and whatever. Literally, the New Zealand, the kids are piling in as well, and it's all kicked off, and then it's absolute just carnage. And it's come out social media, Aussies saying they won everything, and no comments can go on anything, and we're like, show us your medal, show us your this, show us the trophy. And again, it was a crazy way to finish the tournament, but ultimately, down on paper, England retained the trophy 8 out of 7 years, but the whole experience... Any players over 40, I'd come and play. It's just a great experience. It's just to wear the England badge, and it's governed by the FA. They back it and everything, and to pull on the jersey, sing the national anthem, you know, especially over 40s or whatever, who wouldn't want to do that? And you never know, don't tell the wife, but third time the hat trick next year. So it's one of those.
And you've scored in a World Cup final, which is obviously a fantastic achievement, haven't you? And so you must be one of the only players, well, probably the only player to have played England C and England seniors then, is that right?
Well, to be fair, there's a few. I think Aaron O'Connor's played. Michael Frew, who's at with me at Stanford, might have played back in the day. Yeah, but there's a few players that have done it. But when I was playing for England C, it was in the Aldershot time, blotted my copybook with the manager there, all the Aldershot players pulled out of a tournament, and then we never played again. So it was a bit disappointing in that throughout the career, because you want to play in them type of games as well. But again, when this came along, I was like, yeah, not a chance. And I don't know if you know, 3 days before the tournament were flying out, I got married. And then literally 3 days later, no honeymoon, I flew out to Thailand. The wife was like, yeah, you got to do it. but you've got to make it up, you know. And she's a keeper, and she allowed me to go 3 days after the wedding, no honeymoon, and that was my honeymoon. Yeah, it was unbelievable.
And how long do you think you'll keep playing? And, you know, you mentioned 44 and you're still playing for Stamford. Are you excited for pre-season? What's your thoughts?
Not really.
Are you just going to keep going as long
Not
as
really.
You can?
Not really. No, pre-season's one where, you know, it's work to be done. And the latter point of my career, I have looked to it because, you know, there's not many, you don't know how many more you're going to do. To be fair to the gaffer at Stamford, he said to me last year, like, you do what you need to do. You played, what was it, 6 games in 7 days in this tournament. You're going to be fit coming back anyway. You do what you need to do. So I could take in certain, you know, fitness sessions and whatever, but basically he allowed me to do what I want, which he's going to do again this year. The body feels good, but 40 plus, you just don't know. So I aim to at least get to 45, which is in December. And then we take every season as it comes, or week by week, day by day. So, you know, you just don't know when the body's going to turn around and say enough's enough. But at the minute, I feel fine. I feel fit. The lads at Stamford or, you know, while training and things, they don't believe I'm 44 because I still feel like 21, running around like an idiot in training and just enjoying it. And I think that's, to a certain point, when you get to a certain age, you've got to enjoy it. If you didn't enjoy it, you wouldn't be doing it. And, you know, I might look miserable while I'm there and whatever, but that's just my age. That's just like getting through it. But no, it's a release. It's all that I've known. And again, hopefully I can continue and, you know, you do it for a couple more seasons.
Yeah, maybe those times, those tough times at Cambridge and Mansfield and the several clubs and all that, maybe that's why you have continued playing, because you are enjoying it. So, you know.
You've got to. And the ups and downs in football, it's not straightforward. But when you have the good times, and obviously settling at Stamford for the last however long I've been there, I see a lot of people now who I've played with who are in management side and whatever, and they're like, crikey, you still playing? You're still there. So for them to go on that side and me still play, you know, it's, I don't want to say it's a testament to myself, but just keeps on going, and it's the enjoyment and the fun that I have. And obviously the change room that the gaffers gets in every year makes it enjoyable. And when I don't enjoy it, then it's time to hang up the boots. And at this moment in time, I don't see that in the future, so we'll see.
Well, I can say it is a testament to yourself, John, you know, and you've been a credit the whole time you're at York City. And thank you for doing this podcast, and, you know, it's been great to go over your career.
I appreciate it. Like I said, it's always good to talk about myself. No, I'm joking. It's not for you to even ask them, and there's plenty of players that you could have asked them. Again, I hold York, you know, to the highest regard, and will do anything for the club, and they got me what I ultimately wanted to achieve. And it was it was the best clubs I've ever played for, and, you know, a great time in my career.
Thanks, John. So massive thank you to John Challoner there for giving up his time. Actually, the first time I contacted him, he was actually out in Thailand playing in that England Seniors tournament. So once I saw that they'd won it again and thought that would be a good story, didn't quite realise how it nearly ended up in a full-scale riot at the end of it. But that was enjoyable to listen back to. Huge thanks also to Gav Rathmel, who again, like James in the last episode, is a new sponsor. Always great to welcome new people to the kind of sponsorship, and that goes without saying for any future episodes or future series that we end up doing, please do get in touch on social media. And, you know, we aren't asking for massive amounts of money, just things to help York Hospital Radio keep ticking over. So please do get in touch if you're up for sponsoring a future episode or series. In the meantime, if you want to donate to the charity, it's justgiving.com/York Hospital Radio. I've seen so many donations this series and from the Matt Oogler episode, so thank you for that. It does make a huge difference to us as a charity, so please do keep those coming. Did mention on the last couple of episodes about kind of ratings and reviews being really important to us, so thank you for those people that have taken time to do that. I can see that our Spotify rating has increased. It's always been 5 stars, but more people have now put it as 5 stars, which really helps. I can also see that more people are subscribing. I think we've had about another 30 in the past few weeks, so that's great. So do click subscribe at the top, and then you'll get the first notification of when these episodes do drop. At kind of time of recording this outro, I've got a bonus podcast that may or may not have dropped by the time you're kind of listening to this. So it is worth putting those notifications on, because I might kind of change the order of what they come out in. So best way to find out when the drop is to subscribe, and then they'll just appear in your platform ready for you to listen to. 2 more regular episodes in this series to come. The next one will be Paul Stevenson, who, if you went to watch York City in the 1990s, you'll remember him. Tricky winger, very, very skillful. Key part of the Everton victory in 1996 in the League Cup, but also was in the same youth team as Paul Gascoigne. So as you can imagine, there's a few stories there that he tells. And yeah, really good guy, and lots of interesting stories about his career.
really suffered with injuries, including like a fractured skull at Brentford. So how he kind of recovered from that is, again, a really interesting listen. Hopefully people who are enjoying this series will enjoy that episode as well. And then finally, the last episode of the series will be Gary Swan, who is the ultimate cult hero, who went a full season without scoring. And then when we got to the playoffs, scored in the semi-final against Bury and then the final against Crewe Alexandra, as you'll all know. So again, a great kind of career that he had, and a really intelligent guy who spoke very eloquently about his time at York City and his career beyond. So yeah, two really good episodes still to come in this series. But if you're enjoying this, please do keep spreading the word, leaving comments and stuff like that. It's really, really helpful. So thank you for listening.